Come to the second ultimate truth, which is mental sector. Mental sectors must arise accompanied with all consciousness to help consciousness to perform specific functions, to help consciousness in the act of cognition. So consciousness is like a king. Mental sectors like ministers. When king comes, always followed by these ministers. But consciousness, although their relation, the consciousness and mental sectors, their relations called association relations. But consciousness is the forerunner of all mental sectors. Mental factors have four characteristics. Number one, arise together with consciousness. For example, let's see this eye consciousness, this eye door cognitive process. Five, door averting consciousness, followed by eye consciousness, followed by receiving consciousness. All this consciousness arise together with mental factors. For example, eye consciousness, there are seven mental factors arise together with consciousness. And receiving, about 11 mental factors arise together with consciousness. So mental factor, one of the characteristics of mental factor is they arise together with consciousness. Number two characteristic, they cease together with consciousness. So for example, eye consciousness, the seven eye consciousness arise perform the function of seeing the visible object. Then the associated seven mental factors, as when after performing this function, the consciousness ceases. The mental factor accompanied with consciousness also ceases. So they arise together, cease together. Okay. Number three characteristic, they take the same object as consciousness. For example, eye consciousness take the visible object. Then the associated mental factors are called cetasikas, also take the visible object. So they take the same object. Then number four, they have the same base as consciousness. Mental factor has the same base as consciousness. For example, eye consciousness arises depend on the eye sensitivity. So the associated seven mental factors also arise depend on eye sensitivity. For this one, investigating consciousness arises depend on the heart base. Then the associated mental factor with this investigating consciousness also arise depend on heart base. Okay, is it clear? Very clear, huh?
It's about time to seven.
I will touch later, okay? With the goal systematic, step by step, only you can understand well. So they arise together with consciousness and cease together. These two are called association relation. Association relation. We have 52 mental sectors. These 52 can be divided into four groups. First group is called seven universes. These seven universes must arise with all consciousness, whether it's wholesome consciousness, unwholesome consciousness, functional consciousness, or resultant consciousness. This is called universal. Okay? The second group is called six occasionals. Occasionally arise, not arise all the time. This is called six occasionals. Number third group, 14 unwholesome factors. Now this is important because one perform bad karma because of this 14 unwholesome factors. Okay? And the 25 beautiful factors. Now what? If one perform wholesome karma, are accompanied with some of these beautiful factors. Okay, let us see what are the seven universals. Number one is contact. Number two, feeling. Number three, perception. Number four, volition. Number five, one-pointedness. And number six, life faculty. Number seven, attention. Seven universals. Let us go into detail. Number one, contact. Pali we call pasa. The characteristic of contact is touching. Touching. But it's not the bodily touching, not I touch the table. When you see somebody eating pineapple, then the saliva start to flow in your mouth. This mental factor of contact. So not necessarily bodily touch. It can be mental contact. For example, when you think about ghosts, you've got your body become trembling. Mental contact. The mental contact to the ghost. This is called contact, touch. Then the function is impingement. That causes the consciousness and the object to impinge. I think we have studied this before. And the manifestation of contact is as occurrence of consciousness, sense, sensitivity, and object. Without these three, contact cannot take place. And the conjunction of these three is called contact. We discussed it before. So without contact, no connective process will occur. Okay? So this is called universal mental factor. Number two, feeling, vedana, this important factor. The characteristic of feeling is being felt. The function enjoys or experiences the taste of the object. So when you eat something, the feeling, enjoy the taste, enjoy the desirable aspect of the taste. It's not a self enjoy the taste. It's not a I enjoy the taste. It's not a atta enjoy the taste. It's only the feeling, one of the mental factors called feeling, enjoy this taste. Okay. There are three types of feelings. One is called joy or pleasant feeling, sukha vedana. This joy or pleasant feeling enjoys or experiences the desirable aspect of the object. So when you enjoy the food, it's a pleasant feeling which enjoys the food. It's not a I, it's not a you, it's not a person enjoy the food. Okay, it's the mental factor of feeling. Because we cannot break down the continuity or the compactness or the function of mental factors that you think that I enjoy the food. If you can break down the function of mental factors, you understand each function, each mental factor performs its specific function in the connection, then you will not identify I enjoy the food. Okay? And the second, the unpleasant feeling, dukkha vedana, enjoys or experiences the undesirable aspect of object. And the third feeling is called neutral feeling. Upekha vedana, asukha masukha. Upekha vedana. In some objects in which the tastes are neutral or not so evidently good or bad, the feeling that enjoys or experiences that taste is called neutral feeling. So only these three feelings enjoy the desirable or undesirable or neutral aspect of the taste or any sixth sense object, other sound, taste, visible object or tangible object. Okay. So apart from the mental sectors of feeling, which enjoy the desirable and undesirable of object, there's no I, he, she, a being who enjoy the taste of object. For example, when you experience the anapana nimitta, the light, so you feel very pleasant, very comfortable, very pleasant. So it's the vedana, it's the feeling, the pleasant feeling, enjoy that pleasantness of anapana satibhaga nimitta.
Why is the word upekkha used? Because I understand that as equanimous, and neutral and equanimous seem to have a different flavor.
Here is only this here upekkha here refers to neutral feeling only, not the equanimity. Equanimity not at, in this case it's neutral feeling.
So that word can go both ways.
Can go how to go to both ways?
Upekkha translated can be either neutral or equanimous.
Yes.
But this case is neutral.
Yes.
In this case it's neutral feeling.
Yes.
There's one word another mental factor we call tattara macchasata. They're called Sattara Majasata, one of the mental factors we will discuss later. This Sattara Majasata, when developed into higher degree, it becomes equanimity. For sublime abiding, metta, karuna, monita, upekha. But here we refer to feeling only, okay? So the other mental factors are compared to a cook who cook a dish for a king. So other the cook only enjoy partially, but the king enjoy fully the taste of the dishes. So this king is similar to the king. Sorry, this king is similar to the feeling. Is it clear? No one answered me.
I didn't understand that last. Can
okay, for example, feeling cannot arise alone. The seven universes must arise alone. Must arise simultaneously. Okay, so the other, for example, contact and other mental factors are equal to the cook who prepare for the.
So the cook putting all the factors in.
The cook prepare, but they do not enjoy directly the taste. Who they cook for the king. King is the only person who enjoys fully the taste. So this king is similar to the vedana feeling, who really enjoy the aspect, the desirable aspect of the object.
Okay. When there's an object that has more than one quality, it's not all sukha, it's not all dukkha, what would be experienced first? Like for instance, would you say that the person coming to it has something to do with it? Like a child does not enjoy vinegar, but an adult does. The vinegar has not changed.
I can't get you.
What would come first if there were something that had more than one quality?
For example?
So for instance, like a cookie might have a chocolate. Yeah, a cookie. And you don't like chocolate. Or it's bitter and it has sugar. Which you find sweet and delightful. Would you experience both simultaneously, two feelings at once?
Cannot.
One or the other?
Cannot.
Does it depend on the person?
No, only one. Only one is you experience for someone that you don't like sweet taste. You don't like sweet taste. So then the unpleasant feeling, the sweet taste become undesirable for you. So the unpleasant feeling enjoy experience that undesirable.
So it's not that objects have this essential quality of super and duper.
It also depends on the individual's inclination. Okay. Okay. Now we go to the third mental sector, perception. Sanya.
Sister, before I was going to ask you, you said that the king has all this stuff, all. The cook prepares. So that means that the feeling, I have heard and it has been said here too, that at feeling you can stop. And if you are very mindful.
Yes. So you stop the feeling, so feeling will not lead to craving.
Oh, I see. But perception will arise.
Yes, of course. These seven universes will arise with all consciousness.
there's no
position, you cannot stop.
They're successive process.
Arise together.
Right.
Seven arise together. Okay. After as I keep on going, you will become clear and clearer.
Mm.
Okay. Because as a teacher, we have to understand each mental factor first, then we can go to, we can overview. Without understanding, I cannot overview everything. Okay? So be patient, okay? So perception, samnya. The characteristic of perception is perceiving the quality of the object. Each object has its own quality. For example, a bird, we say the conventional truth of a bird. What is quality? The two wings. Now, special quality of an object. So the samnya perceives the quality of the object. And the function is to make a sign or mark as a condition to perceive again that it's the same. So when you perceive the quality of the bird, the two wings, then you make a sign, okay, this bird's got two wings. So it becomes a condition for next time to perceive, and when you see the two wings of a small, then you know it's a bird. Okay? Or recognize what has previously been perceived. In the manifestation, interpreting of the object by way of the features that had been apprehended, like a blind man recognized an elephant. So when a blind man, how he recognized elephant? He touched the trunk, there's a feet, there's a body. So he recognized by way of the features of that object which had been apprehended. It's called manifestation. Okay? And perception is very important. We have distorted perception, vipalasa, sanya vipalasa. So this distorted perception takes wrong to be right. It's like what is actually exists is impermanent, suffering, non-self, and impurity. But because of the distorted perception, we see everything permanent, a permanent happiness, self, and beauty. You see everything beauty. It's like if I say 32 parts are in repulsive, you resistant of it. Why? Because previously you have already perceived it as beautiful. Maybe when you were young, you were taught all the organs in the body are beautiful. So the perception deeply implanted in your mind. Now, this is called distorted perception. Once you have perceived wrongly, it takes great effort to remove it. Isn't it? So you see 32 parts, how can it be beautiful? The hair, you take out a few hairs and put in the porridge. What's your feeling? What's your feeling at the first place? No, I don't want this porridge, throw it away. So actually it's not beautiful, but how can you perceive it beautiful? Because of the distorted perception. In the first place, you perceive it as beautiful, then the function of perception is to make a condition to perceive again that it's the same beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. This is how perception deceives us, cheats us. The wrong perception cheats us. And for example, another 32 part of your body, your tooth, your teeth. The moment you wake up from the bed, you try to smell your own teeth without brushing it first. No one will like it. Mm-hmm. And your saliva. You see, some people don't have repulsive. Undesirable, okay? More moderate. Undesirable. So every part, if you take out one by one, every part is undesirable. None is beautiful. But because we perceive it in the first place is beautiful, now it cheats us. Or it's beautiful. Okay? Just like the young deer that sees scarecrows. Scarecrows, in the paddy field? As a man. A young deer, previously, he had seen men before. So men got head, got two hands, got two feet. So So it makes a perception. The function of perception is to make a sign, a mark, to perceive it again. This is the same. So he already made a perception, implanted in his mind, the man has had two hands and two feet. So the farmer want to, because the deer always come to the paddy field and eat the paddy, so the farmer want to frighten this deer, so he put a scarecrow close in the paddy field. So when the young deer come, oh, it's a man, frightened, he ran away. Same theory. Huh? Once he perceived wrongly, next time you think it again, same. So once you perceive everything is permanent, then every time you see everything is permanent. When you perceive everything is beautiful, next time you also perceive it's beautiful. Okay. Yes.
If I see something, say I see an animal which I have never seen before, mm-hmm. So that means this function cannot be complete because nothing is going to be complete.
It perceives the quality first.
Okay, so it can complete the perception.
The character is perceive the quality, la. Then the function is make a sign, then next time I perceive it again the same. Okay. No, okay.
The word sign or mark in this situation, is that in Pali, nimitta? The same word?
Make a sign or mark, that's the
concept. Yeah, nimitta.
Yes.
Nimitta
sarana. Yes.
Make a nimitta.
Just like when you first see Patipatta Nimitta, you know, then you recognize in next time, oh, this is Patipatta Nimitta. Any other question? No? So is it clear perception? So perception cheats us. Okay. Number four, volition, cetana. Characteristic, it wills. Huh? The function of volition is accumulates karma. I will tell you how it accumulates karma. Okay. Manifestation, coordination, organizes or urges its associated mental factors in acting upon the object. Thus, volition has a double task. It accomplishes its own function of accumulating karma only when it associates with wholesome and unwholesome consciousness and urges associated mental factors to do their work. How? For example, these seven universes must arise together. Volition urge the contact. Please do your work. Contact the object with the consciousness. And the contact urge the feeling. Please enjoy the desirable aspect of the object. So it urges the mental factor to do their own work. And it itself accumulates karma. How? Okay, for example, when you are enjoying your food, you're enjoying your food, the feeling enjoys the taste of food, but it's rooted in greed. So at this moment, the jhana, one consciousness accompanied by joy, associated with wrong view, unprompted. Okay, this consciousness, remember or not really? This consciousness arises. And consciousness cannot arise alone, must accompanied by at least seven universes. So it's the volition in the seven universes that mental factor accumulate karma in the jhana process. Because it's rooted in greed. The function of volition is accumulate karma. So this jhana, at the jhana process, wholesome and unwholesome karma are performed. Yes?
Is there any difference between volition and intention?
Same. Same meaning. Yes?
I'm a little bit confused.
Okay.
If you have an investigation there, so what? If you have an investigation, then why you need perception to determine already?
Investigate, you know you make decision. You may make decision. Determination, you make decision.
No, I mean perception. Before what you just said, before perception, give us wrong
perception.
You say perception already, I mean, I like it or this is wrong view or right view. If perception already determines, make a result of it, why we need investigation?
Okay, I think because you do not attend my previous lecture. There is, at this moment, all these are very weak yet. Only when you reach my door connected process, you know? My dog, there's no investigation. At that time, the still only see color. What is the shape? What's the form? It's not appear. Do you remember that? Only my dog. Okay, because you don't attend my previous lecture. So only my dog, everything becomes, only after the third or fourth my dog, that the bird appears in his mind. Okay. The previously, everything is so unclear. Okay, I come back here. So volition happened in a jhana here, rooted in greed. That volition performed the function of accumulating karma. Okay, but in the pangdo cognitive process, because the taste is still not so clear to the mind, so the unwholesome karma performed in the jhana at the pangdo cognitive process is very slight, not heavy karma. So this karma, when ripened, cannot produce rebirth consciousness in a four vocal state. Cannot. Because very weak. Only produce karma in the course of existence. After that start with rebirth and death in between. Only can produce karma in between that. But my door, because wholesome and unwholesome karma are performed and strengthened already, so the volition in the jhana here, rooted in greed, can produce rebirth consciousness in next life, maybe in four vocal states or in human life. Okay? But unwholesome sure can, if produce unwholesome consciousness, cannot produce rebirth consciousness in the human world.
If a person does something with an intention that is wholesome, but there's still underlying ignorance, is there less unwholesome karma produced than if the person...
If you can give me an exact example, it's more easy to explain.
Okay. You see somebody who needs help. And your intention is to help that person, so you go and try to help that person. And I'm trying to think of a reason why you haven't really helped that person. I can't give you the example.
Okay. You can figure it out, then you can.
Okay.
Because if you don't give me exact, then I can't answer you. I can't give you a precise answer.
Okay. Wouldn't it be along those lines if you were to want to feed a bhikkhu, so you slaughtered an animal like the chicken in your backyard to feed the bhikkhu and you make sure the bhikkhu didn't find out? That's good karma or bad karma?
Bad karma, of course.
But your intention is to feed, to offer dharma.
But based off delusion, you perform not the right thing. The karma, the bhikkhu also will not eat that thing. Killing is that once you perform that, you know, it happened at full mind door cognitive process. Okay, when you are killing, it's mind door cognitive process. But if intention, if you are good, for example, okay, this thing I want to offer, this good intention. But that killing itself happened in the mind door cognitive process and wasn't come up. That when this happened, you have to pay for it. But that intention to fit not strong compared with the killing.
But what the good intention still has more effect because of the goodness of the recipient?
Yes, but that goodness is based on the killing. So, it's not a... It's not very... How to say? Cannot be appreciated.
So, I'll give you a sort of silly example. A man's wife is asked by her, do you like my new hat? Does it look nice?
Okay.
He knows that she wants to look nice. So he says, yes, it's a nice hat, but he really thinks it's a hat. He doesn't want to hurt her feelings, so he lies. Maybe something like that.
Intentionally. I think for Bodhisattva, he will never tell lies to kill somebody. Okay? Preset means preset. Although you do with intention, but you break the preset, it's already bad karma. Then the intention is so little, how do you say, not important at all. Right? That bad karma is heavier than that intention. Okay?
But sister, how could you keep separating intention and karma if volition and intention are the same and those both are karma?
You keep example. If you keep new example, I will explain to you. Okay.
But twice, the both examples, there was an intention and then there was the act. So we hear again and again.
For example, you want to kill the dog, kill a chicken to feed the monk. At that moment, the intention is killing the chicken only, not the monk. At that, my dog committed process because we have to see very precise one moment after another. So I want to kill this dog, this chicken to feed the monk. The moment you kill, it's put in anger with the volition, accumulate the karma. Okay?
This is what I don't understand about that story about Angulimala.
Okay.
Because even if he was just killing all these people to get their fingers for his teacher's necklace, he was still killing all these people.
Yes, of course.
So it seems like that. And I thought what we were hearing was that because his intention wasn't really to kill the people, just collect their fingers.
His intention is still killing. If he did not achieve arhanship, definitely immediately that he will go to hell. But because he has already achieved arhanship, that his karma cannot ripen already. Because no more rebirth, no more fight against
So this intention about the difference between just wanting to please the teacher and giving the fingers versus killing the
teacher.
I got that right.
Do not occur at the same connected process. At different times. Okay. I give a story to say what is intention. That story happened during Buddha's time. There's a queen called Samawati. She is stream emperor, Sotapan, and she is foremost in radiating loving kindness in all the lay disciples of the Lord Buddha. But one day, the King Udena, the queen of King Udena, because she harbored a grudge towards the Lord Buddha, and the Queen Samawati is very devoted to the Lord Buddha. So she doesn't like it. She doesn't like her. Then she planned to kill her. So one day, she set fire on the palace where Queen Samawati and her ladies stay. So all of them were burned to death. But all of them have already achieved either Sotapan or Sagadagami or Arhanship. During that burning, they also practice very hard. So all of them go to the good plane after that. So we should not see death itself. Where they reborn also very important. So why she ended with such terrible death? Because in her previous life, when she was a queen of Menaras, one day she and her ladies went out to a river to bathe. And she feel very cold. So she asked her ladies to set a fire on the bush to get some warmth. But it's too late to spot a Paceka Buddha, which was sitting inside the bush attending the Nidora Samapati. attainment of attainment of cessation. So it's too late to spot that. But the anybody, Anagami and Arahant or Pachega Buddha who attained Nirodha Samapatti or attainment of cessation cannot be burned. Cannot be burned. Cannot be harmed by anyone. But this queen did not understand that. So when she saw that a Pachega body was in the middle of the fire bush, she felt very uneasy. And she also worried to be blamed. She's afraid to be blamed by the king, you know, by lighting the fire without due caution. So in order to cover her mistake, before that, she burned, she light the bush without intention to kill this Pachega Buddha. Because she did not know this Pachega in the bush, without intention. Without intention means without volition. There's no karma. At that time, if she stopped that, no karma. But after that, because she's afraid to be blamed by the king, then she set fire again. She asked her lady to collect some dry grass and put all over the Pachega body and pour oil and set fire. And this is done with volition, because of this bad karma that many lifetimes she met with death by fire. This is how karma works. Not only one lifetime, many lifetimes. Why? Because of repetition of jhana. One life can produce one result. So many jhana pass, arise and pass away. This is called done with intention or not with intention. Okay, to clear please. Okay. Now we come to the next one of the seven universe. One pointedness or ekagata. The characteristic of one pointedness is unification of mind. It fixes the mind on its object and is the state of collecting the mind. The function unites the associated mental states. Manifestation is peace. When this one pointedness develops, it becomes concentration. When it's not yet developed, it's only, if we cannot say concentration. So one pointedness, when developed, becomes concentration and it becomes one of the factors of five jhana factors. Then the next one, life faculty, jivitindriya. The characteristic is sustain the vitality of the consciousness and mental factors so that they will remain alive and endure for their full life. Otherwise, they will perish before the task of getting or knowing that object is complete. For example, eye consciousness arises accompanied by seven universes. The light faculty maintains, gives life force to the associated mental state so that they can perform their own function to sustain their life so that they can do their work until it is complete, finished. Is it clear? Okay. Then the function is to make this all mental factor occur, to give them life, to make them occur. And manifestation is as the establishing of their mental factor, including consciousness, to establish their presence so then they can do their work. So contact can do work, feeling can experience the object and so on. Without this life, they cannot do their work. Okay. All consciousness and mental factors can function actively because of the life force of this life faculty. The last seven universal is attention, manasikara. The characteristic is conducting the associated mental state toward object. For example, you see a person, first you must have attention first. So attention conducting the contact, conducting the feeling, volition, one person's toward the object. The function is to look associated mental state to the object. And the manifestation face to face with the object. And because of power of attention, that one or another object is constantly present in the mind. Without attention, even the elephant in front of you, we cannot see. Because of the attention, the power of attention, then one or another object constantly appear in the mind. That's why the attention is regarded as a charioteer or rudder of the ship, which direct control the direction. Okay, this seven universes contact, feeling, perception, volition, one pointedness, life faculty and attention must arise with all consciousness. Whether it's wholesome, when it accompanied with wholesome, all the seven become wholesome. When it accompanied with unwholesome consciousness, all the seven become unwholesome. When it accompanied with resultant consciousness, all the seven become resultant. When it accompanied with functional, all the seven become functional. Okay? Without this seven, perform the most basic and essential cognitive function, with which without this consciousness of an object would be utterly impossible. Without this seven, you cannot recognize an object. It's a very basic cognitive, it performs very basic cognitive function.
If I remember right, the five, list of the five skandhas.
Five?
Skandhas.
Five aggregates, five khanda, okay?
Contains two of these, feeling and perception.
Right, good.
But not the rest.
The rest called formation.
Oh.
You know, five aggregates with feeling, aggregate of materiality, including all 28 materiality. Then aggregate of feeling is this feeling. One of this. An aggregate of perception, one perception. The rest are the aggregates of formation. Okay?
Why are these two singled out as separate aggregates?
It's very important. As I say, the distorted view, you know, the perception. Once you perceive wrongly, all your life become, you see things in the wrong way. Perception is so important. And feeling, the feeling that enjoy, the experience, that because of feeling, people go crazy sometimes. Become craving, clinging, you know? Which cause the craving and clinging, that's where the round of rebirth go on and on. So these two are very important. These are separately. And how these seven universes perform their specific function in the total act of cognition. I can give an example. For example, eating, in an eating process. Contact. How contact performs its specific function in the act of cognition. Contact causes the taste and the tongue consciousness to impinge. Okay? Then feeling, if you enjoy the taste. Feeling experience the desirable aspect of that taste. Then perception. Perception, the characteristic, it perceives the quality of the taste. Maybe it's a sweet or bitter or so on. It perceives the quality. Or it makes a sign, if this is the second time you eat, it makes a sign or mark to perceive again, this is the sweet taste, this is the same sweet taste which I have eaten before. This is how perception works. Then one volition, if you eat with greed, then volition accumulates karma. If you dislike the taste, the volition also accumulates karma, rooted in anger. Okay. And also volition also urge contact to do his work, to urge perception to do his work, to urge feeling to do his work. So volition performs two task. One is urge, associate the mental sector to do their work. Then he himself accumulates karma. Okay? Then one pointedness, fixing the mind onto the taste. And life faculty, sustain all these seven, the life force of these seven, so that they can do their work. And attention, conducting all the other six towards the object. This is how the mental sector perform their specific function to help consciousness in the total act of connection. Is it clear?
Yes.
Nearly 1 hour. How to finish? I only touched seven, there are 52. Okay, so consciousness, this seven universe arise together with consciousness, and with one consciousness only. So consciousness, their relation, consciousness is like, I mean, give a simile. Consciousness is just like a car. Car body, without this shift gear, you cannot move. Without petrol, you cannot. Without the steering also, you cannot. So consciousness, just like car body. Then the mental factors, just like the shift gear, steering, petrol, who help the car to move forward. Is it clear? Okay. Any question?
Okay, I'm grateful you could explain to me in what attitude should one approach eating then, happening in front of you?
In the process of eating?
Yeah, I've experienced it with you really tasty and delicious and I really enjoy it. Am I therefore approaching this with completely the wrong attitude? And is my whole attitude based on greed?
Okay. You want me to explain in detail how?
No,
how to approach the food. Or how to approach the
food.
You eat with mindfulness. How to approach so that the greed will not arise. Is it your question?
Yes.
Okay. You eat with mindfulness. Now you're practicing what meditation you're practicing now?
On the breath. Focusing on the breath.
Okay, so you don't pay attention to the taste. You pay attention to the breath. So the glitch will not arise in the mental stream. Okay? This is how the monks practice.
It's a beautiful problem. You know, I think food is the one area where I can't muster the willpower. But if only you could explain how to get the will to do that.
Thank you, on my way.
If you concentrate while you're eating on just being grateful for the food, on just feeling an overwhelming sense of gratitude for the nutrition, and think about that you're being you're intaking energy in order to practice.
Right. This how monks and nuns reflect before eating. Mm-hmm. So that not to be overwhelmed by the greed.
Mm-hmm.
To sustain the body, reflect. Mm-hmm. I take this place to sustain the body, not for beauty, not for fattening, not for enjoyment, not for taste, but to sustain the body so that I can meditate well. You keep on reflecting, or then you develop the gratitude towards those who prepare the food for you.
Mm-hmm.
So at the mind, so you can turn your mind to that wholesomeness rather than enjoying the taste.
Yeah.
Another one, you just pay for a lemon, you know. If you can't, for example, when you bite, the saliva flows, it's flowing. Then you just contemplate the flowing. Or sometimes you bite a heart, like almond seeds you take every day, hardness, then you contemplate hardness. This one way to overcome the greed.
Well, I just wanted to say in my experience, when I do that, when I just think about concentrating on being grateful for those who prepared the food and those who brought the food, whatever, it tastes better.
Do you develop greed?
No, greed.
No, I just develop more gratitude.
Okay. So long you do not develop greed, you know, and
I just want to say that in that what the monks and nuns say, I think there's another part maybe you don't like to mention that, that as beautiful as the food is now, it will very quickly turn into something very not very pleasant.
We call particular ahara sanya, something like that. Ah, particular sanya. The perception to the foulness of the food. The one of the meditation subjects. We have 40 types of meditation subjects. One of the meditation subject is we collect the yuduna repositiveness to recollect undesirable of food. So you think that okay, for a monk had to go up in the bath, you know, then in the bath in the journey, sometimes raining, sometimes so hot, you know, you start to think to get this food is so troublesome. So when you swallow mixed with all the saliva, you know, it's very unpleasant. Then go into inside, mix with all the, you know, juice, gastric juice, it's all sour, all the undesirable. Then finally, it's thing not get digested. And all the stomach, even in our house, we have to wash the toilet. But in our stomach, we never wash our stomach. For 40 years, 50 years. So it's so smelly in the stomach. You know? So you start to think undesirable effect of the whole system. Then when the food gets undigested, you have to pass out. You pass out when you go to the toilet, no one go into the toilet with smiling face. Or come out with unpleasant face. So you start to think all this, then you develop the detachment to the food. And this is one of the ways taught by Lord Buddha.
Is there anything allowed within Buddhism to be useful? As Irene explained earlier on, or just a minute ago, the food initially looks beautiful, and then it goes through the process of digestion, and then perhaps it doesn't look beautiful.
Yeah.
Even in that, there is a recognition of beauty. Say, like, I'm walking through the forest and it's a beautiful forest. I'm sort of left with sort of feeling of guilt now.
Guilt? Wait, you see everything's beautiful.
My perception, I perceive it as quite beautiful.
If you see with beautiful but without attachment, it'll be alright. Without attachment. Okay.
Is that the point of like being mindful of whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? I mean, isn't that why we...
If you're mindful whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, then the craving will not be developed.
Right. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Then we come to sixth occasion. Occasional. I will go very fast because already 1 hour. Number one, there are six occasional. One is called initial application of mind. Number two is sustained application of mind. Number three is decision. Number four, energy. Number five, rapture. And number six, desire. Here, desire doesn't mean lust. Here means chanda. Lust is under greed. So I think before I proceed, I need to discuss with you. After that, we will reach 14 unwholesome mental factors, which is very important. These six are not so important. And another 25 also very important. Should I skip this one? Yes. Because tomorrow I have to return projector. I skip this one. Okay. Okay, 14 unwholesome factors. Number one, this among the 14 unwholesome factors, there are four we call unwholesome universes, which will arise with all unwholesome consciousness. Number one, it's called delusion, underlying cause, delusion. Number two, shamelessness of wrongdoing. When you perform an evil deed, because you do not feel shame, that's what you do. Called shamelessness of wrongdoing. Number three, a misprestige statement. Okay. Number three of fearlessness of wrongdoing. You do not afraid of consequences of committing evil. It's called fearlessness of wrongdoing. And number four is restlessness. So whatever unwholesome karma you perform, this form must be there. Then another 10 unwholesome occasions: greed, wrong view, conceit, hatred, envy, stinginess, worry, sloth, bother, and doubt. These 10 unwholesome occasions only arise with certain. They cannot arise together. Only certain of them will arise with certain unwholesome consciousness. Let us discuss what delusion, blindness, or not knowing. It's called delusion. Function to conceal the true nature of an object. For example, what is the true nature of an object? All objects are subject to change and oppressed by constant arising and passing away. They are unsatisfactory, not satisfied. Then there's no abiding self who exercise control the whole process. That's a is non-self. So because of delusion, conceals the true object of an object. The true nature of an object, that's why we see things as beauty, as happiness, and as a soul, because of delusion. Okay. And manifestation is absence of right understanding. And what's the proximate cause for delusion? Unwise attention. Do not see things as they really are. Unwise attention. The second, sinlessness, ahirika. The absence of disgust at bodily and verbal misconduct. And do not feel shame when doing evil. The function, doing evil things. Now because of sinlessness, then you do evil things. Manifestation, not shrinking away from evil. And cosmic cause, disrespect of oneself. Because you do not respect oneself, you do all types of evil. Okay? And fearlessness of wrongdoing. Absence of fear about bodily and verbal misconduct. Fear about the consequences. Fear about the consequences. Do not fear about consequences. Doing evil things. The function is doing evil things. And manifestation, not shrinking away from evil. Cosmic cause, disrespect of others. Fearlessness means not being afraid of consequences when doing evil things. What are the consequences? For example, self-blame, blame by others, punishment from government, and falling down into four woeful states. So do not fear of these consequences. That one perform evil. Okay. And the next one, restlessness. Characteristic, disquiet or of an unsettled state of mind, like water whipped up by the wind. The function, unsteadiness, like a flag or banner whipped by the wind. The manifestation is a tumoy, like a heap of ashes that flies about when hit with a stone. So this four, delusion, shamelessness of wrongdoing, fearlessness of wrongdoing, and restlessness are called four unwholesome universes. So you can check your mind. When you are doing evil things, this four must be there.
Approximate cause of restlessness?
I think it's unwise attention. I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe it's restlessness about the meditation practice.
Mm.
Is that unwholesome?
Of course. Of course. Until now, it's still. No, restless is unwholesome.
No, not like that. In.
When you are restless in your meditation, when you are restless,
no.
It's unwholesome.
No, no. It's like getting the right. To the right state of meditation.
It's not restlessness. Getting the right state has nothing to do with restlessness.
Would worry be tied into restlessness? Because then worry
is, I will discuss. Okay, we will discuss later. Worry is under the root of dosa. Okay, next. Greed. The characteristic of greed is grasping an object. The function is to stick like a meat and stick in a hot pan. I cannot stick it up. And the manifestation, not wanting to give up. So it's very easy to recognize. You can check your mental state. If one of it is present, you know it's a greed. As a way, that's why it's important to understand all the characteristic, function, and manifestation of mental factors, so that you can check your own mind. If one of these characteristics appear in your mind, then it's a greed. Okay. And the proximate cause, seeing enjoyment in things that lead to bondage. Okay. Because you see enjoyment in things, you see the beauty in things. That is. Equal to craving, same meaning. The cause, the origin for the cause of suffering is this craving or greed. Last, the chant, you say the desire is under this greed. Why the greed arise? Because you see things in the wrong way. You see it's beautiful. You see the existence, one after another, is full of happiness. Because you see things in the wrong way, that you develop the greed. Because of delusion. Delusion is the underlying cause. Delusion, blindness, not knowing, unknowing. Or see, cannot see the things as they really are. That one develop greed towards sensual pleasures, towards existence, and so on. Next is wrong view, deceit. The characteristic of wrong is unwise interpretation. Function, to presume or seeing wrongly that is eternal soul. Manifestation, wrong interpretation of or belief. A wrong belief that this is eternal. Or believing in mighty creator of the world when there's none. But actually there's none, because in the teaching of the Buddha, it's only cause and effect. We are not created by God. It's because our past karma performed rooted in craving and ignorance that the rebirth arise, whether in the human plane or Brahman plane. So it's only cause and effect. When the cause ceases, then rebirth cannot arise. And when the ignorance and craving are rooted out, no more arising of rebirth consciousness. So it's only cause and effect. There's no creator. Belief in creator is called wrong view in the teaching of the Buddha. And belief everything perish away after one dies. Means denying the working of the karma. If everything perish away, so I can perform all kinds of unwholesomeness, I don't have to pay for it. This is called wrong view, very serious wrong view. Okay. So wrong is rooted in greed. Huh? Because you wrong interpret the five aggregates, the five khandha, as eternal soul, then you develop the attachment. You talk about five khandha, which actually is arising and passing away, but you wrongly interpret this five aggregates as I, myself, as eternal I, then you develop attachment to it. That's why wrong view is rooted in attachment, in greed. Then conceit. Characteristic is haughtiness. Then the function, self-exaltation. And the manifestation as vain glory. Always want to be the top. So conceit to be regarded as madness. And it's rooted in greed. Because it's rooted in greed, conceit occurs in a mode of self-evaluation. Taking oneself to be superior to others. Or taking oneself to be equal is also called conceit. You think oneself inferior to others is also conceit. So three types of conceit. For example, you take oneself inferior to others. You say, I live, depend on myself. Why should I pay respect to him? It's also conceit.
I think I've read also that conceit is simply the view of a personal self without some of these
things. With view of self, there is wrong view. Wrong conceit and wrong view cannot arise together. Because the one who says believe a self is wrong view. Rooted in wrong view, it's a wrong belief that self exists. But this conceit is rooted in greed. The thing superiority, self evolution, think a superiority than others. It's different from wrong view.
And I think I've heard that only an arhat is completely free from some degree of conceit.
Right. No, free totally. Only arhat has no conceit.
Right.
Anagami still got conceit. Okay.
Yeah,
that's really
good.
Any other questions? No?
I have a question about the conceit. It sounds like the conceit, whatever this idea of I compared with the letter higher or lower or equal to others, there is always the line so that I
is. That's based on delusion, not based on wrong view. Based on delusion, not seeing things as they really are.
So this conceit is in greed and also
delusion, because delusion is underlying cause for all unwholesomeness. It rooted in greed because it developed attachment that, you know, I'm superior than he is.
Sometimes
mind,
if I'm
inferior
to some other one, others,
it's
also considered.
Yes, it's considered. Also develop the attachment to the vain, just the vain glory, thing himself. Okay. For Sotapan, stream entry has eradicated wrong view of self. But cannot. He no more think such aggregates as self, but he still has conceit. That type of conceit is based on the loka samanya atta, the self commonly used in the world, the word I, the word of I commonly used in the world. For example, Buddha also say I. First month, when I teach you Sapsdhamma, I mean Buddha also used I. This type of I is nothing to do with wrong view. So for those for Sotapan, they are conceit, although say I am, but the I am is the commonly accepted I, not the ultimate truth that I.
Commonly accepted.
conventionally accepted truth.
So they still have that kind of conceit.
Right.
Because they still think conventional I. Reality of.
Take it as a conventional truth for Sotapan, for Shin and Shur. Because he already eradicated wrong view of I. So that view already firmly uprooted, cannot arise in him. But he had to use the, that conceit arise based on the conventional truth of I. Hatred. Hatred including all from violence up to very subtle irritation, all included in the hatred. For example, frustration, depression, all are stress, maybe all are rooted in anger. What is the characteristic of hatred? Aversion, resentment, irritation, annoyance and anger, all are called hatred. And function, to burn up is support or to spread like a drop of poison when going to your body, spread up over the body. Manifestation as persecuting, is it?
Persecuting.
Like an enemy who has got his chance, want to show the cruelty. So hatred is a violent striking of the mind at an object with a destructive element that burns oneself and others. So by understanding the characteristic function manifestation, you can examine your mental state, whether it's rooted in greed or hatred. So it's very useful to study mental factors. And also,
I don't understand the use of the word violent there. Because didn't you say even a subtle form of irritation, any kind of aversion?
Even irritation is also a type of violence striking. Violence is heavy word, of course. No, even irritation, the mind is very distressing. Maybe I use a very heavy word, violence.
Because it could be very subtle.
It can be very subtle irritation. For example, when you're sitting in a meditation and the mosquito you get very irritated. That's also rooted in anger. That's very subtle type of irritation. Okay.
One question. So does the anxiety belong to this category, anxiety?
Anxiety. Anxiety is same as worry.
I see.
It's rooted in hatred. Rooted in hatred. Because why? Because it's accompanied by this pressure feeling. When you have anxiety, your feeling cannot be joyful, cannot be equanimity, cannot be neutral. So only this pressure. So sometimes you do know this mental factor under which root. You don't know it's under greed or under hatred. But if you check the accompanied feeling, then you will know. So this pressure only accompanied with anger, only one. Then joy and neutral feeling accompanied with greed. So by studying the accompanied feeling, you will know it's under which category.
So can we say in this sense that all negative emotions are rooted on hatred?
Can be greed. What are the, for example, lust is.
Or negative feeling, like depression, frustration, resentment,
stress, worry, anxiety, all under hatred. Because the company feeling is very depression, cannot be joy. Okay.
By using mindfulness, you fix on which one it is like annoyance, and then I'm annoyed. At that point, can you minimize the karma?
If you are mindful of your annoyance, yes, of course. You can stop it. So you stop it by mindfulness and by right effort.
Right effort. Not if it has passed.
Right effort to replace it with wholesomeness. Yes. I have
we have discussed four types of right effort. Quickly replace it with another different opposite good mental state.
Even though it has happened, because it has passed by the time
it happened, the moment it happened already, if you are not mindful, karma already accumulated. But you can change it very quickly, my mindfulness. For example, when you are meditating well, the mosquito is sucking your blood. What's your first feeling? Sure, it's angry with him, angry with this mosquito. So the moment anger arises, the karma is performed. But if you allow the anger arise again and again, then the jhana will go again and again and again. Then many unwholesome karma are accumulated. So how you change the mental state in order to stop that unwholesome to continue? You say, okay, like, I offer my blood for you, may you be well and happy, may you be sick well. After he will go away. Okay, then you change your anger to the loving kindness. And you think it's your dana for him. Doesn't matter, only one drop of blood, even for me. Isn't that good? Okay? Yes?
Or else you could just notice unpleasant when the mosquito starts biting you, and the anger might not arise. Right?
But mindfulness must be very strong, that, yes. Although unpleasant, still angry. It can be too. You know? If your mindfulness is very strong, unpleasant, just unpleasant, okay. But sometimes unpleasant, you still feel angry. You know? Okay. Okay. 8:00. What should we do tomorrow? Then after that, I want to tell you how this unwholesome consciousness arise, performing their specific function in the unwholesome karma. But I don't have time. So okay, tomorrow I will discuss with Roland if I can lend one more day projector. I will continue tomorrow.
How much time? If
I want to go detail, of course, another 2 days. But I can go very fast without going to detail. Then 1 day should be enough.
Should we could also do this without the projectors. We have to give it back. I mean, just hearing you describe it.
Sometimes I need to use VT, you know, the mind of thought process, and show one and one. Some people, they have not yet studied before this VT, Some old meditators can see whether I can take one more day.
Okay. So,
any question? I want to end this.
I have a question about the one-pointedness in the jhana factors. It's always one of the
become samadhi. Yes.
But when you explain it, it's universal. Everything has one-pointedness, even one of the
Good.
So, is there something special? But the other universal factors are not mentioned, the feeling and the context. So is it something special?
No, very good question. One point is we have degrees, you know. For example, in a certain universal, it's just very primary. It's just fixing the mind, that's all. Because without fixing the mind, you cannot recognize the object. It's like the mind without fixing it, how you know the object? You cannot recognize the object. But when this one point is developed, to the highest degree, it becomes concentration.
And to develop, that means it's repeated many mind moment groups after.
Yes. Repeated again and again, then it evolves up, become concentration. For example, wisdom, you understand the Dhamma, also wisdom. Jhana, you attend Jhana, also got wisdom. But you attend Arahanta path and conscious, Arahanta path conscious, that wisdom is highest wisdom. So it got degree, you know. In the seven universal, it's just a preliminary degree, very basic function only. But once you develop it again and again, it becomes concentration, in the jhana concentration. Okay.
Another question?
No. Yes?
Could you say a few words about the wholesome desire that you skipped over?
Wholesome desire? Okay. For example, I wish to become a monk in my future life. I wish to offer dana. I wish to keep my precept pure. That's what I call wholesome desire. Okay? Any other questions?
A wholesome desire, can it be greed? And I'm thinking of, for example, if somebody were to learn to do jhana, and let's say they have some addiction. An addiction, maybe addicted to drugs or substance abuse, or have some unwholesome addiction, And so they want to get away from the addiction, so they say, okay, well, here I have a way. I'll just enter this peaceful state as an escape. So they begin to crave jhana. They begin to really crave that state. And that's what they use it for. Could you say something about that? That kind of craving? Isn't that a form of greed?
Create a jhana, or actually enter into jhana.
Yeah, in fact, they find it, like if you're addicted to drugs, if you're addicted mm-hmm. to a state of consciousness,
mm-hmm.
well, basically they replace jhana
mm-hmm.
with the substance,
mm-hmm.
and that becomes their...
For example, I want to get it off this unwholesome state, then I enter into jhana, is
right.
it? Okay, it's good. Good.
What about, I can't stand the world, I'm going to enter into jhana, every time I...
Good.
Good. Well, sometimes
can you enter jhana? If you can enter jhana,
what? Don't you have to have upekkha and joy and
even the arahant sometimes he gets so how to say not disgust. He gets so mm-hmm. bored because what arahant see whatever he sees is only impermanent suffering, non-self, impermanent suffering, non-self. Sometimes I don't want to see, I'm tired. So he enters into cessation of, attainment of cessation, where mind and matter completely cease for a period of time. So it's good, but if you want to get it off unwholesomeness, you enter into wholesomeness, it's good.
So sister, would it be safe to say that because it's a wholesome, like what you're headed for is a more wholesome result, that that supersedes the aversion, which I think is what we're really talking about. What the desire to avoid the world or the desire to do drugs is rooted in hatred.
Mm-hmm.
So, but since you want to enter jhana, that kind of just cancels out the hatred thing. Mm-hmm. I think that's what
it just stop the unwholesomeness. Either not addicted to the drug is rooted in greed. You want to stop the unwholesomeness with the intention to stop the unwholesomeness, then you enter into jhana. It's very good. See what you mean?
Well, yeah, but I could also see, let's say it's a parent who has children.
A parent.
Mm-hmm. And let's say, well, I don't take care of my kids.
Mm-hmm.
I just enter into jhana.
Yeah.
They're bugging me they crave that. They want the peace. So you let
that feel unwholesomeness.
That would be unwholesome.
Wholesomeness.
Okay.
The moment your mind in a jhana state, you accumulate a lot of higher wholesomeness. Very higher wholesomeness.
The intention.
But sister. Well, sister, can such a person enter into jhana? Because
if he had mastery of jhana,
but to have entry of, you must have a wholesome mind to start off.
The
you
moment
must have a pekka,
yes,
must
no,
have
no.
joy.
The moment it has mastery of jhana, the moment you shift your mind here, the anapanasati baka nimitta will appear here already. Then very quick you can enter. Yes?
The entry to jhana is due to high concentration.
Mm.
And in the jhana, the defilements are temporarily suppressed.
Right.
So you're really not gaining anything in the jhana except the peaceful state, temporary state.
Right.
So one can use jhana to avoid as an aversion tactic.
Mm.
But when you come out of jhana, the aversion will still be there. Only if the jhana is done with wisdom as an object will the kleshas then be worked on. As I understand. So just doing a jhana, anyone who develops a very strong concentration can still have great defilement.
Yes.
But the great concentration
yes,
is enough to suppress them temporarily.
Yes, after immersion you can still get angry, but because of the supported that jhana, you know, you don't get angry so quick. You know? For example, for those after when the moment you get up from a deep concentration, his faculty is very serene. You know? Because he just emerged from a very good state. So he can't get angry very quick because of the supportive of that strong, powerful concentration. If the person emerged and scold people, then I doubt about his attainment of jhana. Okay?
Right.
Yeah. You get up from the concentration, then you still can maintain very, you know, serenity of the mind. Only after the power of the concentration loses its force, then the anger comes again. Then you should change your mind by wise attention. there are many ways to take care of the defilement.
In the moment when you're having that aversion to your children, which is giving rise to desire to enter jhana, you are accumulating unwholesome karma through those mind moments.
Yes.
That's true, right? So you're not avoiding that in any way, because the moment you turn to the next, then you start accumulating.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
If you do not enter, it may keep on developing aversion.
Right.
That is worse. You know? What is this correct?
Since you said that worry is rooted in dosa,
yes.
What would you advise to do so as not to worry?
That worry in the Buddha's teaching we have two. I will discuss later, okay? Yes.
But in the kind that you mentioned, would you give any advice on how to deal with that
worry?
Worry.
Worry?
Yeah, you know, you said worry is a kind of dosa.
Yes. Because worry in Buddha's teaching, I think, when I wish worry. Okay, worry, characteristic is subsequent regret. Now we have a specific worry mentioned in Abhidhamma. Okay? The function, to sorrow about what has done or what has not been done. Two things. What has been done, for example, before you became a Buddhist, you know, you do know the teaching of the Buddha, you have done killing, sexual misconduct, and then drinking alcohol, and telling lies, slandering, all sorts of evils. So now you sorrow about what has been done. Then, what has not been done? For example, when your mother are alive, you do not take care of them, now they have passed away. So what should be done has not been done. When somebody are in need, then you can afford to offer help, but you do not offer your help. So you sorrow what has not been done. Okay?
It's like remorse, isn't it?
Hmm?
Is that remorse? Remorse?
Yes, remorse worry same meaning in Abhidhamma. Okay. Manifestation is remorse. Yes, remorse. Okay. So the proximate cause is what has not been done. So this is a specific worry in Abhidhamma. Okay? Now your answer?
You know, my question was, what could you do about it if I have a mosquito biting me? I could send it loving kindness, offer my blood as dana, and then that way alleviate myself of like repeated anger, jhana, right? And just have loving kindness as the replacement. But when you're worried, at least we believe in this country, we worry so much that we're not in control of it. Mm-hmm. Our mind is worrying us. Like worrying has come to us.
If you think, if you, by worrying, you cannot change the world, what for you worry? If you cannot change it, what for you worry? I think there's one saying by Tibetan master I love very much. If you worry, but you know you cannot change it, why should you worry? But if you worry, if you can change it, you do it. Then you finish your worry. Isn't it? worry, but you know you can change it, you change it, then your worry stops. But if you worry, you know that no matter how much you worry, you can't change it. Why should you worry?
So you replace the worrisome thoughts with loving kindness?
Worry how? You give me the exact example, then I can answer.
So I'm worrying because I'm not attaining nirvana this week.
Why should you worry? You keep on practicing, you will attain.
Because I think that if I keep worrying about it, then 1 week it'll happen. Well, I'm not saying that I will, but my mind just keeps on chattering like that.
Because this person interpreting wrongly.
Hmm. But do you think that since it's rooted in dosa, that if I were to practice loving kindness, suddenly my worrying will stop?
If you think that you can change it with loving kindness?
Do you think I could change it with loving kindness?
Yes, of course. Okay, last question? No, so we stop here. Idam me,
idam me,
punyam,
punyam,
astava kaya, Vaham ho tu.
Vaham ho tu.
Idam me.
Idam me.
Onyam.
Onyam.
Nibbanasa.
Nibbanasa.
Pachayo.
Pachayo.
Ho tu.
Ho tu.
Itavata.
Itavata.
Chammehi.
Chammehi.
Sampadam.
Sampadam.
Punya sampadam.
Punya sampadam.
Sate deva.
Sate deva.
Sate buddha.
Sate buddha.
Sate satta.
Sate satta.
Anumodantu.
Anumodantu.
Sapa. Sampati.
Sampati.
Siddhiya.
Siddhiya.
Sampati.